Coming to you from Orange County, California, this is the Jug Life Podcast with Max Ada and Chad Wesley Smith. Hey everybody, what is up? Chad Wesley Smith here, bringing you another episode of the Jug Life Podcast. We are here at Stanford University, Palo Alto, California, Silicon Valley, the cradle of venture capitalists and Facebook and everything else. Joined, as always, by my co-host, magnificent Max Montana. How you doing, buddy?
Doing well, yeah.
And our guest today, Stanford University throws coach, Cal Bear alumni, and we'll get into the issues with that. I guess not actually, we weren't actually teammates ever, but because you graduated.
Maybe. We were on the team together, but I don't think we competed as teammates ever.
So. Two-time Olympian for Iran in the shot put. New Stanford University throws coach, Amin Nikfar. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well, man. I really appreciate you guys coming all the way down here after your visit to Cal and ending your trip on a better note than you started it probably.
So today's episode is brought to you by DTF Ratios and Overhead Medball Throws. It's a lifestyle. The people who get that reference, I don't make the references for the masses, just the few who get them and really appreciate them. So let's just jump right into things with Amin. Tell us a little bit about your background in the shot put, some of your athletic career.
Yeah, it started with throwing in high school, kind of classic story of getting cut from the baseball team. My brother was a shot disc guy at the high school, and he was pretty good, and he was also cut from the baseball team. So good opportunity to do something in the spring, and it blossomed into a career way down the road, and I think a lot of it has to do with my high school coach Mike Bunsick, who was a two-time Olympian in the discus for the U.S. So he was a former NCAA record holder, and he may still be the SEC record holder from Kentucky. So I'm not sure about that.
And sort of atypically of two-time Olympians, you were not this high recruit. You were not coming in, with all the accolades to Cal, and really had a sort of a breakthrough in the middle of college. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I had a 57-foot throw and a 55-foot stand throw, so it wasn't a very good glide.
I'm big on the bad conversion.
Yeah,
as
two
well.
2-foot conversion doesn't really show what you're capable of, I think. But had a good opportunity to go to Berkeley, it took me a few years to figure out what it meant to be a Division I athlete and the hard work that it takes to get to where you want to be. And like I said, it took 3 years to figure that out. And I think, in part, I would attribute that to Jim Schmitz from Sports Palace in San Francisco and spending some time with me the summer after my third year of college. Just with weightlifting and learning that higher end mentality for performing in sports.
So you trained with Jim Schmitz. I know you trained some at Catalyst as well, and you've been around the world of USAW and weightlifting, but using that to advance your career as a shot putter. So tell us, how does a shot putter best use the Olympic lifts as part of their training?
Yeah, I think I can first tell you how I used it, and then a different conversation is how to best use it, right? the way I used it was a really good approach at the time. Jim Schmitz had coached Ken Patera, who'd thrown the shot, Bruce Wilhelm, who threw the shot, and I'm sure a bunch of others that had thrown the shot also. And so his approach was, weightlifting's not gonna hurt your throw, and I bet it helps. Right. And so, he was very upfront about not being a track and field coach and being a weightlifting coach and seeing that there was a connection, not necessarily a direct correlation, but seeing that there was a connection between getting stronger in the Olympic lifts and throwing further. So that's what we did. Like I said, I spent a whole summer there, and I spent a lot of time after that as well. Working on the snatch and the clean and jerk and all the lifts that come with it. I think my favorite one was the jerk support. Yeah. You know, jerk support is my favorite one.
You can use 1,000 pounds.
Oh yeah, yeah. I got up to 3x2 at 270K.
Yeah.
And it made me feel really strong. It was nice to hold a world record over my head.
Best numbers in the snatch and clean and jerk.
You know, in the training room, you know, and competition, they were different, right? But overall best, I think 137.5K in the snatch and 180K in the clean and jerk. And then I had a set at Catalyst that was, it was a set of five off blocks in the jerk. And I did it was 185K for a set of five.
From the front or the back?
From the back, I think it was from the back. And so, you know, I think the biggest takeaway from that big set at Catalyst was that it's a 16-pound shot, right?
Yeah.
And being able to put 185K over your head five times is fantastic, but it's still a 16-pound shot, and that's what's got to move. And I was really beat up after that, and it took a while to recover and to be able to perform again in the shot. So the approach that I took was get stronger and the ball go further, and that worked for about 7 feet in the shot. So I was, you know, maybe 54 high in the shot, and I finished my senior year at Cal with, I believe, 61.11. So it was good for about 7 feet.
Looking back at my on throwing career, that was the exact same issue that I faced was, you know, let's get this 500-pound bench and 700-pound squat. And then it's like, well, 16 pounds still isn't very, very heavy. So obviously as a coach now and having Alex Young, right, was your weight throw champion last year. How has your perspective changed on how the weight room influences the throws?
Yeah, and so even going back to my professional career, POOR, professional, right? and so going back to that, you know, 9 years after college, and Mohammed Sitara, who's the coach at Cal now, he was my coach after college. He really started that shift in my mentality that more is not necessarily better. Right. In weightlifting.
Yeah.
So he was really the key for that. And he let me fail also. You know, he let me fail. And not to a point where it was detrimental, but, you know, if it's November and you blow yourself out doing a clean and jerk that's heavy, it's okay. You know, like, it's okay sometimes to overwork that way. You know, and then he'd kind of just help me come back around and teach me a lesson, right? And with Alex specifically, I think the lessons that I learned as a thrower and seeing other throwers and other coaches, I mean, the guy's extremely powerful. You know, he's got some big numbers in the weight room. And if we pushed, they'd be really big. You know, that's how he's wired. He's a strong guy and he can move fast. And you know, I think if he really wanted to, he could be an accomplished Olympic weightlifter, right? But that's not the path that he's taking, right? And so really focusing on bar speed. I think some people get that confused with lifting light. So we really focus on moving the bar with, you know, not a heavy load, but a load that can move quickly. And then when we see the bar speed that we want, we move the weight up.
Do you guys still do Olympic lifting as a you know, general means of training now? Do you still use it a lot?
Yeah, we do. We last year we did. I didn't change the rep scheme until we got into the competition period, and so basically everything we did was 3x4 with Olympic lifts and the squats also. You know, accessory stuff. We did 3x8, but the whole year was 3x4, and so, you know, we touched on it and spent a little bit of time, but it was, you know, the bulk of it was just some, you know, some quick rhythm hang cleans. I don't think we went over 125K, you know, for rhythm hang cleans and rhythm hang snatch. We might have gotten up to 100K, but not a big, heavy, slow-moving bar, you know. And so that, you know, I don't think that took up 50% of our training. I think it was more like 25 to 35% of our training was with lifting, and it was important.
Right, you know? Right. And all the rest is all special exercises for throws.
You know, we didn't actually do a whole lot of special exercises this year. I really wanted to see the importance of them, right? So we addressed that special strength using heavy hammers, and we addressed mm-hmm. the specific speed using light hammers, and we really didn't do very much in terms of plate twists or, you know, heavy winds or any of that specific strength work. Didn't touch it really. So it was interesting to get a good result out of it too. So
yeah.
So as you look back at your Olympic career, you were an Olympian 2008 in Beijing mm-hmm. and 2012 in London, correct?
Yep.
Do you have a particular favorite memory that stands out to you?
I think, you know, the first time I think it was really, you know, it was really nice to know that I was a part of it, right? I think a lot of people can go in and be really wowed by everything and think that they're on the outside even though they're a part of it, right? So I think the big way that I framed it was I'm supposed to be here, you know, and just enjoy it, you know, enjoy being a part of it. But at the same time, I think I was realistic about my position going in, you know. I think that there are, for shot putting, and probably for all the throws, there are kind of two kinds of people that are there are the, you know, the ones that are, you know, quote unquote sure things to make the final, and then there's everybody else, right? And I was everybody else, you know, so.
Somebody's got to be everybody else, right?
Yeah, yeah, and that's okay.
So, you know, competing for Iran, I'd imagine kind of the rock stars of the Iranian Olympic team are the weightlifters, yeah?
They're part of it. I think that with that really old tradition of heavy sports, going back to, it's called Zurkhane, it's like club swinging, and then there's some other activities they do, and one of them is wrestling, and going back to that ancient sport, I think you can see why the culture in Iran really favors weightlifting and wrestling, right? I mean, it's an ancient thing that they've been doing. And so I'd say, you know, because they should be, right? Like the weightlifters and the wrestlers are really focused on, and they should be.
How do you end up in, how does that happen where you end up on the team in Iran?
Yeah.
Coming from Kansas.
For sure. I'm from California.
Oh.
Yeah, that's okay. Kansas is nice too.
Where would you say you were at?
Michigan.
Michigan, sorry.
Yeah,
Michigan.
I trained at Michigan when Coach Mo was there. I popped in and trained for a bit. But so in terms of my story and getting on the Iranian Olympic team, my father's Iranian. So he immigrated here in, I think it was 1977, to go to school. He went to San Jose State, and there was some good funding from his town because, you know, it's the site of oil rig number one in the Middle East.
And that's a big one.
That's the first one, right? and so the town is called Masjid Soleiman, but they just call it MIS for short. And so they had some good funding, so they sent people here to go to university. So he came with, you know, a couple of his nephews, and I'm not sure if one of his brothers came or not, but I know a couple of his nephews came, and he ended up meeting my mom and staying, and that provided the opportunity to be a part of the Iranian national track team.
These days, you can get practically everything on demand, like our podcast. Listen wherever you want when it's convenient for you. Did you know that you can also get postage on demand? All you need is stamps.com. We use stamps.com to ship books and shirts and dozens, if not hundreds, of packages a day to get out to all of you guys, our great listeners. And they've been great for growing our business and so simple to use. With stamps.com, you can access all the services of the post office right from your desk. Buy and print real U.S. postage for any letter or any package, all available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Just click, print, mail, and you're done. Stamps.com will even send you a digital scale. You can weigh all your letters and packages and print the exact amount of postage you need every time. Right now, you can use Jug Life for this special offer, a 4-week trial, which includes postage and a digital scale. Don't wait. Go to stamps.com. Before you do anything else, click on the radio microphone at the top right corner of the homepage and type in Jug Life. That's stamps.com and enter JugLife. Thank you.
Nice.
So with the Iranian weightlifters, you were in the time of Hossein Rezazadeh. Mm-hmm. He's setting world records and all this stuff. And one of the favorite stories, and to be honest, I don't even know if I made this up from a little bit of information that you may have given me, but you know the story I'm talking about.
I do.
Let's talk about the support and American USA Weightlifting coaches and athletes. As you listen to this, don't get too jealous.
Yeah. So the story they tell, and who knows what level of story it is, whether it's fact or myth or legend, like who knows, right? But it's a story that they tell. They say that after he won an Olympic gold medal, in part because of his 263 kilo clean and jerk,
the world
record at the time, he was given a kilo of gold for every kilo that he lifted.
I got on the Google machine.
There you go.
263 kilos of gold at the time that I Googled it, I think it was about $14 million, mm-hmm. The equivalent of $14 million. So American weightlifters, maybe you clean and jerk 264 and we'll see.
Yep.
Like $264 like Applebee's gift card. Maybe.
Yeah.
We'll see. We'll get you
I'll put in on that.
Damn.
I'll help out with that.
That is a lot of gold.
So, but I think, you know, more than maybe the amount of money he got, I think the story reflects the value of weightlifting, right? And I'm sure there are stories across to wrestling and I know volleyball's big and taekwondo is big also, and maybe they have some stories that emulate the same kind of support, you know?
I've heard there's like competitions there that'll have 10,000 people at those, and that was Rezazadeh, obviously. There's,
sure.
But do you have any experience like having seen any of that or no, heard of those kind of things?
No, I never went to a weightlifting competition. I believe that they have a professional weightlifting league. So they have different teams that are, you know, maybe sponsored by the National Oil Company or a steel company.
Right.
Who field
good sponsors.
Sport clubs, you know, across sports, right?
Right,
so they've
got
a soccer club, a weightlifting club. There was a time, and they may still do it, where there was a track league, and I got to be a part of that.
Oh, cool.
So I was on a steel company team, and it was like a four meet series, and you know, interesting approach to sport. You know, just having different companies field.
Kind of interesting that
clubs.
It's private too. Mm-hmm. I assume they're private companies.
I think it's a mix. It's a mix.
Right.
You know, like there's. I mean, the National Oil Company is.
Sure.
You know, is that? But
so the Iranian fans at Worlds this past year in Anaheim, very boisterous.
Always,
very
always
excited some weightlifting.
Yeah,
and it seemed like a lot of them, they were just there because they're like, someone from Iran is doing something here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the fuck a snatch or clean and jerk is, but I'm gonna yell as loud as I can.
Yeah, and they may not know. They may not know what the lifts are. They may know what the lifts are, but they may not know what the lifts are, but they want to be supportive, right?
Yes.
They know the names.
Yes.
A lot of them know the names that are involved.
I'll tell you what they don't know what it is a press out, because when those happened a bunch and they got really confused.
Yeah, and we could get into a big, long conversation about the press out situation.
Speaking of jerk supports, right?
Yeah.
Maybe Salimi should have been phoning you up there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he needs to call Jim Schmitz. You know, I think he. I remember seeing him leave his shoes on the platform at the Asian Games.
Yeah, he retired.
He retired last week.
Yeah, so I mean, fantastic career and.
Yeah.
You know.
So your career as a throws coach, you're new here at Stanford, coming from southeastern Louisiana.
Southeastern Louisiana.
Now is that where Bobby Boucher? What?
Yes, it is. He was recently inducted into the Hall of Fame at Southeastern.
Southeastern Louisiana Mudhens.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think we've talked about this with strength coaches as well. Is they get this idea in their head, you know, when you're in college or high school, like, oh, I'd really like to be a throws coach and everyone thinks like, oh, I'm gonna go coach the Olympic team, like. But it's a bit tougher road than that. So tell us a little bit about your journey here to the farm.
Sure. I finished my career as a shot putter in the fall of 2014.
How many times you were like Sugar Ray Leonard though? You were retiring.
The answer is three.
Back many times.
The answer is three.
Yeah.
And it, you know, again, to go back to Coach Mo, the first two times, you know, I told him, you know, after 2008, I'm like, hey, I'm done, I'm out. I'm done throwing. He's like, all right, I'll, you know, give me a call in a month. And I'm like, no, seriously, I'm out. I'm done. He's like, yeah, okay, maybe 6 weeks. Like, just give me a call when you're ready to start training again. So he did that to me twice. And I kept training both times. And the third time, when I was talking to him about it, he didn't do that. Right. And he knew, and we had, you know, great communication about that. And, you know, he just, you know, probably gave me an attaboy or something and was really supportive. He's still supportive. And so when the shot putting career ended, kind of at the tail of it, I was applying for some jobs in the NCAA, and the one that hit was University of New Orleans. And that was a good experience. A lot of learning going on. And really opened the door for the job at Southeastern, because I got to University of New Orleans and I was like, all right, where are the throwers? And they're like, we don't have any. Okay, what do you want me to do? You know, and so my job there was to A, recruit throwers, and B, coach the high jump and the heptathlon. Or at least the field event half of the heptathlon, right?
Yeah, when we were driving over here and I was putting a little outline together and Googling your bio, I saw that this high jump coach.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So the only other person I know who did this was Dave Wolman, throws coach and high jump.
Peter Miller does it, too, at Minnesota.
So if people at home are seeing you, not much of a background in the high jump yourself.
No,
how does one begin coaching an event that they have never done?
You know, first off, it's out of necessity, right? Like my boss told me I'm coaching the high jump, so I'm coaching the high jump, right? And I think that part of the windy path that I took to the Olympic Games and the shot translated over to learning the high jump, right? So you've got to be able to figure stuff out, you know, and look for opportunities to learn and look for doors that are a little bit open that you can kick down and go through. And so I really enjoy learning. I think that's part of what, you know, besides the natural transition to coaching, I think that's what brought me into coaching, right? Was just really enjoying the learning process and watching the athletes learn and learning myself. So I tapped every resource I could to learn the high jump. And I think one of the most meaningful ones was Boucher Eck-Snyder. He's a legendary jumps coach. I mean, really, he's a legendary track coach. Who, you know, has made a big name for himself in the jumps, but he's coached everything. And so using him for a resource and using, you know, some other folks I know in the NCAA as resources, and also just, you know, thinking that I understand people, you know, and understand athletes and how they move and a little bit of the psychology behind, you know, what they're going through. You know, I think that was more the driver for success than knowing an incredible, you know, having this vast knowledge about the high jump technically, right? So I think it was more being motivated and being creative, you know.
So now you're here at Stanford, and for those people not aware, I mean, as a Cal Golden Bear alumni, Cal and Stanford, very heated rivals going back a long time. I mean, this would be, you know, like a Florida versus Florida State,
yep,
or Oklahoma, Texas type of rivalry. Mm-hmm. You know, 45 minutes, hour drive across the bay. You've got these rich private school pricks, you know, then you've got these, I would say blue collar, but Cal's not really a blue collar school either. But you know, private versus public and all this stuff. So I guess my first question about that is, how do you sleep at night?
Like a baby. I sleep like a baby every night.
So what are your goals here as in your new position as Stanford throws coach?
You know, I think part of what's fun for me is to be one of the few that's been on both sides, and really appreciate the rivalry from either end of the spectrum. And I'm getting worn out by both sides, right? Like all the Cal people are wearing me out. Stanford people are wearing me out. Not too bad, because, you know.
Are they making you do some sort of, like, they're going to jump you in?
No, there's no.
Like, we got to make sure this guy's really down for the tree.
They haven't yet. They haven't yet. We'll see. I hope they don't. you know, I think one of the funnier questions I got from one of my athletes was if I wear some piece of Cal gear under my clothes every day.
Cal
the answer
underwear.
Is I don't. The answer
blue
is
blue and yellow underwear.
Yeah, but it's like I said, it's a really cool thing to see both sides of, and you know, having been an athlete on the Cal side of the rivalry is a much different experience than being a coach on the Stanford side of the rivalry. So,
all right, where can people follow you? Follow Stanford Throws. All
yeah.
That stuff?
I know we have a Stanford Track and Field Instagram and Twitter. I don't remember it off the top of my head. I've been here since August 1st, and so I'll have that for you. I'll text it to you. My personal one is Nick Far Throw Far, that was given to me by Art Venegas.
Uh-huh.
You know, Coach Venegas gave me that, and I think he did it. Somewhat inadvertently, Ruben Williams and I were throwing at the Friday section of a two-day track meet at UCLA, and we asked to be in the Friday section for the shot put, which was the B section, because we both had another meet we wanted to go to on Saturday. So UCLA didn't have anybody throwing the shot. Coach Venegas came down to watch, and he was getting really fired up, and then Ruben and I were getting after, as he does. And he was just yelling and screaming as he does, and he's like, "Come on, Nick Far, throw far!" And so it stuck, and I used it for my social mediums.
Nice,
yeah.
Nice. I'm Max Ada. You can find me on Instagram, Max_Ada, on Facebook, or email me max@jtsstrength.com.
And if you're interested in online coaching for powerlifting, weightlifting, super total, strongman, or power building, visit juggernautcoaching.com. Subscribe to the YouTube. 6, maybe 7 videos a week now with the world's strongest videographer, Shorty Sedang. The Jug Life podcast, our bonus episode, Beers with Chad, on Fridays. You find all those on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and thejuglife.com. Make sure, you know, I mean, I don't know if this is tampering, but if you're a high school thrower, this is a good guy to come talk to. So Nick Far, throw far, find him on Instagram and hit him up. And I'm Chad Wesley Smith, @ChadWesleySmith, and @JuggernautTraining on Facebook and Instagram. Thanks for watching and listening. We'll see you next week.